Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good morning, listeners. This is Three Women, Three Ways, and welcome to our radio show this morning. Excuse me. This is Deborah, and I'm going to toss it over to Pinkley for just a moment here.
Well, good morning, listeners, and there's three of us, but we're missing one this morning.
I'm here.
Oh, there you are. Hi, Heather.
Yeah. Hi, how are you?
Good to make it.
Sorry I'm late. I was having, I redid my computer yesterday, you know, where I reloaded everything.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I wasn't getting in this morning, so I apologize for that. Sorry I'm late, and have we gotten to past introducing ourselves?
No, we just started. Do you want to start with that and tell the listeners who we are?
Okay, that sounds great. We are Three Women, Three Ways, and we look at the world through our own eyes and our own perspectives, but we also share a great deal of interests, and one of those interests, of course, is violence. And violence against women, and domestic violence, and sexual assault, and all sorts of aggression against women. And I am working on a PhD in psychology so that I can do some work with the field of domestic violence. And I'm Heather Stark, and we have with us Deborah Adams. Deborah, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yes, good morning. This is Deborah. Excited to be here. We have a good show lined up, I believe, with some good topics for great conversation. So I'm Deborah, and I live in Southwest Washington. I have a tagline for me. It describes me pretty succinctly, which is I've lived it, I've studied it, and I've worked it. And I'm talking about domestic violence. But over my academic career, I have really focused on the underpinnings, the history and the cultural things that seem to cause and support all forms of violence against women and violence in general. So we're here today to have a great conversation. Pinkley, you want to introduce yourself?
Absolutely. So Pinkley is my nickname. And it's Pinkley Connie Sue, or Connie Sue or Pinkley, whichever I answer to all of the above. I've been in the anti-violence field for about 15 years, survived a domestic violence relationship and left and fled in my car in the summer of 1997. So I've gone on to some academic education, got my bachelor's degree in 2007, and I've been working at a local nonprofit agency for the last 15 years, started out as a volunteer, and we work with all forms of survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault. So we are talking about relationships this morning, ladies.
Yes, but not
this
always
great
relationships.
this is a topic very, very dear and near to my heart. The question that we asked out of a conversation about the saying, why doesn't she just leave a domestic violence relationship, or why doesn't she just leave? So our topic this morning is on relationships, moving forward, stay, or just letting things go. And I guess there's a combination of all of that through that process. So I not only survived my domestic violence relationship once, but at a very uncertain time in my life, 10 years later, I ended up getting back together with my former husband, which was quite an interesting journey. So where do we start, ladies?
Well, if I can, I think that I would like to start because I did the book on Why Doesn't She Just Leave? And I came across all sorts of research. And I think it's kind of typical of a lot of people that when something life-shattering happens for you, you want to go. It's kind of like being hit by a train. And when you're past it, when you're beyond it, you kind of go, whoa, what happened there? And so I think a lot of us go back and look at, and for some of us study, the effect of violence and the lingering effects. When I was doing the book, Why Doesn't She Just Leave?, I did a lot of research, and I discovered that, you know, one of the typical questions you hear is, why doesn't she just leave? Like, it's some sort of easy thing. Or sometimes I'll hear people say, well, if anybody hit me, that's it, I'm out of there. But in fact, it's a more complicated decision. It's not a black and white decision. And women struggle, I think even in non-violent relationships, women struggle with the, you know, trying to do what's right, trying to do what's best for them, trying to do what's best for their children, and balancing economic needs and social needs and all of those kind of things. So there's not a demarcation point where somebody goes, okay, today everything's wonderful, tomorrow I'm out of here. It's a process, and in that process you have to decide, you know, is this the point at which I leave? Is this the point at which I go? What's the danger if I leave? What's the disadvantages of leaving? What are the benefits of leaving? And it's a whole complicated mixture of things that go into that decision. What do you think, Deborah? Have you had that experience before working with as an advocate?
Absolutely. Over the past 20 years, as I worked with our local community domestic violence and sexual assault programs and the survivors that came to them, what I've discovered, which really just verified my own personal experience, is that there are 1,000 reasons why we stay in relationships. And there's way more reasons why we stay in a relationship than we choose to separate. And it has to be, not has to be, but generally it is some sort of almost catastrophic event that happens in either within the relationship or in your life in general that causes you to finally make that decision. What do you think about that, Pinkley?
Yeah, and I think that the catalyst or the event or the final decision of your process is can be so different for so many people. I think that hope is always in the mix of the process, the hope that things will get better, the hope that a person will change, the hope that whatever the issue is will go away. Relationships, particularly I think marriage, relationships are not an easy thing to navigate. And I know for me personally, coming from a background of, you know, a pretty fundamental Christian home, the idea of marriage was until death do us part. There were many confusing and very challenging thoughts and processes that I went through during that period of time. So it's not an easy process to make that decision one way or the other. And I think especially for women who are in domestic violence situations, and it doesn't have to be physical. We've talked many, many times about it doesn't have to be physical. Somebody might make that judgment of, wow, one time he hits me, I'm out of there. But there's, you know, the verbal and emotional abuse can be just as detrimental. So the question is, I always like to present the question, if it's a domestic violence situation, not why doesn't she just leave, but why doesn't the abuse stop? Putting the responsibility on the abuser, not the woman or the person who's being abused. There's so much pressure on that person. And the person who's doing abusing is, what is the point of changing? They've gotten to that point successfully and managed just the way they are, but yet it's causing all this absolute turmoil and chaos within this relationship. And not to factor in or to factor in, what if you have children,
mm-hmm.
you know, in this relationship? The families that you've built, the outside relationships. So it's a very complicated scenario. And I'm just,
well,
I think it's...
Well, and I don't know about you ladies, but I know from my own personal experience, you also are vested in making this relationship work. It's
Absolutely.
Something that you try very hard to do. Society makes the success of a relationship the woman's responsibility. You know, remember, if mama's happy, the happy mother, happy family, you know, and all the women's magazines that have all the articles about how to please him and how to make it work and how to do this and how to do that. I've never seen a Field and Stream or a Hustler that has a headline on it that says how to make your relationship work. It's all laid on the shoulders of the woman. So if her marriage isn't going well, one of the first things most women do is look to themselves. What am I doing wrong? What can I do differently? How can I improve this? And so she's vested in making that relationship work, and no matter how hard she's trying, it's not working. So I think that the decision to leave is more than just an economic or an emotional one. It's also, you know, we have these generations of expectations of a woman that if she doesn't make it work, there's something wrong with her.
Right. You know, I'd like to invite anybody listening, if they'd like to call in and join our conversation, please do so. Our guest call-in number is 646-378-0430. And I do have the chat room open. I'm ready and anxious to hear any comments. And please join us. So, Connie Good. Sue, last night in our preparation for today, you found a link on that had 7 steps. Did you have a chance to check that out, Heather?
Yeah, I did, and I thought it was really right spot on.
I did, too. Do you want to talk about that, Connie Sue?
Well, it just goes through some very, I think, self-assessment-type questions. And what attracted me to this site is the question when to leave a relationship, and it's not specifically around domestic violence, but it's just kind of walking you through that step. And when is it time to break up is one of the questions. Feel the love. I mean, there are several points. Maybe each of us can take one and go through what this is what this is talking about. So you want to start
like
with one of those?
I really liked her first rule, which, as she says, is do not lose yourself.
Yes.
How important do you feel that is in any kind of relationship?
Right.
Well, I think that also ties in with trusting yourself, you know, which is a huge component, to just trust yourself.
Well, I really found myself in, when I was in that marriage, feeling, taking on a great deal of responsibility for managing it, as you mentioned, Heather. But in that process, I really feel like I did lose myself. I lost my self-identity, and I became like an addendum, an add-on to the husband, you know, if he was successful, that was a reflection of me, and that's how I got my, you know, maybe my self-worth or that sort of thing. But really, if you're in any kind of relationship, be it friends or intimate or familial, if you cannot be yourself in that relationship, then that's a sign. That's something to look for. Don't you agree?
Absolutely.
Yes.
And I want to mention the website here. It's www.coilyembrace, C-O-I-L-Y, embrace. And the line is authentic, coily, beautiful, and you.
Yeah, I like
I love that. Now, the second rule that they talk about in the first one is just absolutely paramount. And I think that goes with in any kind of relationship that you're in, whether it be a friendship, you know, it is that you truly do need to not lose yourself. And the second one is, which I talk about this a lot, just because somebody says it doesn't mean it to be true. You have to watch and trust the behavior, not just what somebody says.
Well, and like it says, feel the love. Do you feel the love, or is it just
right.
in word only? I really like the way she says
right.
that.
Well, and I think, again, trusting yourself to believe what you feel and what you suspect, because I think a lot of times we don't, we start having those inklings, and then we push them aside for various reasons. So,
remember, I have four grown children, and when my youngest son got married, I had a conversation with him where I said, okay, now you're married, and you need to show your wife that you love her. I said, I know that you do things for her and she does things for you, but you really need to, what her favorite coffee is. What if you got up early one Saturday morning and went and got her favorite coffee and surprised her with that, Jeff? Or what if you came home from work one day with a flower for her? Or, do little things for her that tell her, and this goes both genders, do things for your partner that tells them you know who they are and that you appreciate them for those qualities. You get what I'm saying? It's more than just the words. The words are super important, but it's also that actual action and behavior that indicates, I see you, I hear you, I'm paying attention to you, and you're important to me.
You're important enough for me to pay attention.
Yeah.
I think it's important. Yeah, yeah. Her third thing is to have a vision, and this is more of a preventative, I think, where you decide what you want in a relationship. You know, that doesn't mean you don't compromise on things, because, of course, that's human nature. In order to have a relationship, it's give and take. But when it becomes all give and no take, then things become difficult, like you said, Deborah. And so I think one of her messages here is to have a vision of what you expect from a person.
Mm-hmm.
And if you find yourself giving up entirely on that vision, there's something wrong with that relationship.
Yeah.
And I think that
relates to value, right? It's, if you're in a relationship, it's good to have some shared values. And I don't know how many times I've heard people say about divorcing. Well, one of the partners wants to have children, the other one doesn't. Really? You didn't have that discussion before? No, I just assumed that they wanted that. And that is kind of a cultural and societal norm, right? That once you get married, then you have children. But no, we actually have to talk about it. We have to know.
Especially in this day and age where it is a choice. It's not a gift.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and I think the other thing that is just really critical, and I think we have a tendency to think that we really don't know what we're looking for, or if we say we do know what we're looking for, we end up settling. So I think it's really critical is to make a list. Make a list of the things that you are not willing to compromise on, that you are not willing. These are the things that you must have in a relationship, things that you're looking for. The children thing is a huge thing. That's a great example. There's compromise in a relationship, but there shouldn't be compromise on the things that you hold dear or as a value or a belief. And I think that's where people end up struggling. And know for certain, people do not change just because you think they will love you and will change because they love you.
Yeah.
Well, that reminds me of an old saying that, men marry women thinking they won't change, and women marry men thinking they can change them. And and I think there is some merit to that saying. I think we do tend to have different expectations about change, and of course we all will change, but not necessarily the way somebody else wants us to. And I also think it's important that when we look at what we want in a relationship, and when we look at that whole idea of compromise, you know, if you find that you're the only one compromising, that's not a compromise.
Yeah, and I'm almost wondering, Heather, do you think compromise is the right word? I'm thinking more it's give and take.
Absolutely.
It's not, like one side is not always demanding the compromise, but it's more like give and take. Like, okay, you get to choose what movie we're going to this week on our date, and next week I get to choose.
Yeah.
So that can be looked at as a compromise, but it is a real good illustration of give and take.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have
constantly
giving out in a relationship and not receiving any positive feedback, then that's going to wear you out and wear you down and make you feel unloved, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. And I think that also it's hard for us to, I think basically women are givers, and I might be making a real huge sweeping generalization there, but I do think that we're the nurturers for the most part, and we are the ones who tend to give a little bit more. Again, a generalization here, I know that. But I think sometimes it's easy for us to not recognize that, wait a minute, we've been given a hell of a lot more than we're getting.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to for all of us to recognize that. And I think her suggestion of having a vision of what's acceptable and what's not acceptable is a really good idea. I don't think we often look at that as as something that we need to look at.
Right. And sometimes we can confuse being nice and with constantly accommodating ourselves for others. To others.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a difference. Connie Sue and I have had this conversation a lot. We can be, is it, am I being nice, or is it because I'm compassionate and still able to hold people accountable? You know, everybody has a role to play in a relationship, whatever that relationship is based on. And if you find yourself being nice all the time, I feel like that kind of is ways that we give up ourselves and who we are as human beings in order to accommodate to meet the needs of someone else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's kind of a key factor. What do you think her next point of is? She starts talking about domestic violence. How do you feel about her statements there?
I love her statement. She says, recognize and act swiftly if immediate relationship enders. Surface, relationship enders, E-N-D-E-R-S. The first one she points out is domestic violence. No one has the right to hit you. You throw things at you or threaten or hurt you, rape you, lock you up, tie you down, or otherwise torture you in a romantic relationship without, of course, your permission. I just love that word, relationship enders. Drug and alcohol, she goes on to talk about, criminal infidelity, those are all considered relationship enders. And I think that a relationship ender goes back to the things that you are not willing to compromise on. Like,
right.
You know, like, for example, let's say your faith is, like, you know, the most important thing to you or one of the most important things to you. And if you meet up with someone who doesn't have the same belief or spiritual relationship with that spirituality, then you really need to ask yourself, are you willing to compromise? And if not, end the relationship. That's an ender. Relationship enders.
Yeah. She also includes infidelity in there. And I am in 100% agreement with the infidelity. And it, you know, it doesn't only have to be physical infidelity, but also the mental, emotional, and all of that. So I think that, and that's kind of a thing that goes under the radar a lot of times, is we think, well, okay, so they did that this once, it won't happen again. And I find that really not to be true. And it has to do with abusive behaviors in general. I believe, that's my opinion, that once you know that you have your partner, whatever your relationship, has been unfaithful to you, whether it be mind, body, or spirit, it kind of breaks the trust. And I think it breaks that, if you had a religious ceremony, I think it breaks that religious connection too. But that's just me.
No, I agree with you. You know, I've been through a lot in my life and in relationships, but one thing I have never experienced is infidelity. It's like, no, that would definitely not be something I would tolerate. However, I'm making myself a little uneasy with that statement because I'm beginning to sound like those people who say, well, I'll just leave, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it might be a relationship ender or it might be a relationship breaker, but it doesn't necessarily become a relationship ender. And that's because there are so many factors that go into, you know, the decision to leave. You know, when do we leave? And it's not just a simple thing. It's not just, okay, he committed adultery, so therefore I'm leaving. There are children, there are economics, there are social supports, there are family expectations. There are all sorts of things that go into that factor. So I find it almost... it makes me a little uncomfortable to say, you know, I would just leave. That would be a deal breaker, you know, mm-hmm. because, in fact, it's just not that easy to just leave, you know, whether
well,
it's infidelity.
Well, I think that some of the points she's making this and why I really agree with her direct methodology here is she's laying it out, you know, for us to read and to see and to kind of then have that self-reflection on our own relationships. But... so along with that infidelity, she has 7 points that she has written. I decided to write a list of reasons to stay or go for myself this morning while we were getting ready, and I came up with 12 things that I think, looking back now, would be things that could help me decide to stay or go, and maybe sooner, because I stayed for 17 years. And
yeah.
So, I mean, and I think that that was one of the points we had kind of wanted to make with our audience, of course, if they're listening, is that it's not usually just this one-time event where someone leaves, especially in a relationship, because, number one, what Connie Sue said early in the show here today already is that hope, you know, that eternal hope that springs up, that we hope things will get better, that we believe in people and their basic goodness, you know. So I think there's Maya Angelou and both and another one that I follow, Iyanla VanZant, both of them have said, believe what they tell you.
Yeah.
Believe what they show you. Your partners in life, your friends, your family, your partners. Believe it and don't be in denial, because if they're telling you something or they're showing you through behavior, then that's who they are. And don't try to cover that up or hope that it's going to change. I mean, I left my abusive marriage maybe 7 to 9 times.
Yeah.
And that was... I want the audience to know that that was before I even identified it as an abusive relationship. So
yeah.
I think it's more, for most of us, it's more like exercise. It's a practice. Every time I left and went back, I got a little bit smarter, a little bit more knowledgeable about what I needed out of life and how I wanted to live my life, although it did take me a long time. But I think there were a lot of other social and cultural norms that were playing into that I just kind of acquiesced to. But it's usually not a one-time event. It's usually an ongoing series of events, I would think, for a lot of us.
Well, I think for the research, again, that I did, indicates that for most women, it's kind of like the temperature going up on the water. You know, it gets uncomfortable, you start having feelings that this is not acceptable, but, you know, gosh, I'm not going to leave because I've got the kids, I've got this, or it would be dangerous for me to leave, it's better to just stay with what I've got, and then all of a sudden the water starts to boil and there's actually a trigger point. Something happens that makes you say, this is it, this is when I leave. So for me, it's not just a relationship ender. A relationship ender isn't necessarily what makes you leave. Does that make sense?
Yeah. In response to her writing, you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So for me, there's a relationship ender, but it's not necessarily the same thing as physically leaving the relationship.
I think her point, though, is that we should be less accommodating and thinking more about ourselves and our vision, and are we feeling that reciprocal love and using that as our guide rather than, say, just a specific kind of behavior. But I think her point is, are these things happening in your life? Have they been happening? Then you need to really assess that and look at it now rather than later.
Yeah.
This is what I appreciate about her article.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But as I said, I think that, at least in my experience, things don't start with a bam. They start with kind of an inkling. And you tend to push that inkling aside. Does that make sense?
Sometimes
absolutely.
Women have also reported that the physical assault started early on in their relationships. So it's not always that gradual heating up.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I think my list that I kind of created, if you'll humor me, for stay or go deciders, decision making.
I don't know, Connie. Should we humor her?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So
we'll
one of the things that happened in my relationship was quick involvement. I met the ex, and the next day we were in a committed relationship. He left his most valuable possession in my care. And so that was extremely quick involvement. And then it was isolation.
Mm-hmm.
So immediately started making my circle of friends smaller. And even as time went on, extended to isolating me from my family. And then as time went on and I kind of was, and this is not the best marriage, it was like, I would say it's not that bad. I'm staying for the kids because we have 4 kids.
Yep.
My family and my family experience doesn't support divorce. Society expects me to stay married. I had some upbringing in a faith community that definitely had some opinions on divorce is not acceptable. And then there's this kind of interdependence where, well, if you don't have a spouse, what do you have? You know, in our world, we're definitely a couple world. And then there became the economic things like, I can't afford it, I can't be on my own. And like you said, Heather, that if you've been in a relationship, you've built things up and you have too much to lose. And the underlying theme for all of these is my intuition, which I kind of, I just didn't hear it. I didn't see it. I didn't feel my intuition. And I think all these other things that I talked about worked against intuition, which is saying your intuition is wrong. Pay attention to this, you know, aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I think what people need to do is really learn about their intuition and pay attention to their intuition.
Yeah, trust that gut. You know, if your gut is telling you, making you uneasy, then, you know, listen to it. And I think for most of us, we get talked out of listening to that. You know, well, he's a good person, or, well, you know, I like my in-laws, and, you know, maybe I misinterpreted what he was doing there. And, you know, there's all sorts of excuses we give ourselves so that we don't just listen to that gut.
So here's a quote, and I wanted to get your opinions on this quote. It says, the longer you put off making a decision, the harder it becomes. Do you agree with that?
I do. Yeah. I think it is a real difficult decision. especially the longer you go. You know, I mean, it's one thing if you don't have children yet and you leave. You know, that's difficult, but it's not the same as if you leave when you have kids. If you leave before you've bought property together, or if you leave before, you know, you become best friends with your stepmother or your mother-in-law, rather, those are all easier to do than down the road when you have all of those additional responsibilities and complications. You know, I think one of the things that I read is that women stay for their children and women leave for their children. So,
yeah.
And I believe that. I really do believe that. So, especially after you have children, it's a huge, huge complication. So in that case, I think, you know, leaving earlier, much better, much better.
And I really appreciate this website as a, you know, I look at relationships as, well, intimate relationships or relationships that you're, let's say dating relationships, that this, they're practice situations. I mean, how many people just end up meeting the person that they're going to spend the rest of their life with? I mean, that's really a rarity. So relationships are practices on developing skills and moving forward and really deciding the things that you want in a partner. And I really, really am just very adamant at this point in my life, believe what they do and not what they tell you. The behavior is just absolutely critical. And it's not, we have a tendency to minimize that and go, oh, I overreacted.
Or he's under a lot of stress right now.
Yeah, or he was just kidding. So the other relationship ender she includes here are verbal abuse, which we don't talk about a lot in society.
Right.
Stealing from you, stealing, gambling, and lying about money.
Yeah. Hey, ladies, we have a caller. Let's bring our caller on.
Okie doke.
Hello, caller. Are you there? Are you there,
caller? Hello. Oh, hi. I was just listening. I haven't put my hands up. I was
okay.
I'll
let you hook them.
Yeah, I've got someone with me, and he's going to make a load of noise, so I better not interact. But
all right.
This is a big show, ladies. I'm enjoying listening.
All right, great. Thank you.
No problem.
So, Connie Sue, yes, I so agree with believe the behavior, because we tend to excuse the behavior, right? We tend to minimize the behavior. All those things,
and hope that they'll change. People do not necessarily change. And if they do change, it has to be because they want to change, and what's working for them is not working. But we are not responsible for other people's behavior. That took me so long to learn, so long. And hope is a wonderful thing, but hope does not make things better.
Yeah.
I mean, that's very difficult. You want to believe in the person that you love, or they say they love you. You want to believe them. You want to believe them when they say, oh, I'm sorry. But the behavior is so much more important and critical, and it has to be a consistent behavior. And if they're consistently verbally assaulting you or putting you down, then believe it.
Yeah.
Believe it. Believe
what
is happening.
But isn't that one of the problems, Pinkley, is that it's not necessarily consistent, especially at the beginning. You do have those periods where everything is fine. So you get one bad incident, and then it's like it never happened. And so, days or weeks or months go by without another incident like that. So you tend to say, well, it was stress, or it was this situation that he was going through, or, you know, and then, boom, it happens again. And, again, going back to easier to leave early than late, is that that accelerates. That pattern tends to accelerate, and by the time it's, you know, consistent and you really recognize that this is the behavior, it's not a once in a while thing. It's actually
what
it is.
Well, here's what I found in an article by Judith Orloff, and she has written, it's called Emotional Freedom. And she talks about how to liberate yourself from negative emotions and create a positive life. But her thinking is that intuition offers a direct line to life force. It is an intelligence that lives in our body. And when you are listening to your intuition, you gain energy. When you are denying your intuition, you start losing energy. And so I think this is kind of a good way to look at it, because don't you think that some folks think intuition is impulse? And her point of view is that intuition is acting from instinct, not impulse, that it is actually based on some learning that we've gained through our human existence. So intuition is not an impulse, and not to look at, oh, that's just an impulse. Why do we quickly turn off our intuition and go to the rational justification side of all those things? And if you don't mind my saying so, Heather, that's kind of what I was thinking your last statements were, that's where they were going, is that it only happened once. That's minimizing and not paying attention. Your intuitive response was, this is not right.
Yes.
And then our rational side jumps in and says, shut up, intuition.
Yeah.
I'm stomping on you right now because I want to rationalize this, because this rationalization stuff is working for me.
Yeah.
And so that's how we get into places in our life where we are totally ignoring our intuition, which is our instinct, which is our body telling us this is a positive or negative experience. Wary. So she says to really try to tune into your intuition and don't minimize and don't deny it. And she says act on vibes. How often do you have that feeling?
Well, you know, your intuition should be your guiding compass.
Yes.
And when your guiding compass is off, you end up going in directions that you normally wouldn't go in, or they're against where you're wanting to go and where you're wanting to head up and in the direction. And you end up minimizing, and that's where you end up losing yourself, because you're following some other situation.
Rational.
Yeah, exactly. That's happening. And, I don't know, and I could be totally overgeneralizing, but I think as women, we often don't listen to that intuition. And it's our guiding light. It is our guidepost to life, is to be listening. And I think the most critical point is taking the time to listen to yourself.
This listed some physical responses to indicate our intuition is telling us that there's something negative happening. So a sick feeling in the pit of your stomach. Mm-hmm. Your skin starts crawling. You're jumpy. You instinctively withdraw if touched. Your muscles feel like they're in knots. Your throat or your chest area constricts like you can't breathe. The hair on the back of your neck stands on end. Or you start feeling sick or pressure or agitated or that feeling of being drained. Because those are some physical responses that indicate a negative situation for you or a relationship. So when we start having those, instead of just saying, oh, poo-poo, I'll get over it, it'll pass, we should be saying, why am I having this physical reaction in this point? What's dangerous for me? What's not working for me? But yeah. I think we just so quickly say, intuition, you're not valuable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I think that's exactly right. I think that it's complicated. There are complicated reasons why we try to not listen to that inner voice. I think if we could trigger an instinct or trigger a response that always lets us pick up on that inner voice, I think we'd be so much better off.
Yeah.
Her rule number 5 is the topic that we're talking about is about listening.
Mm-hmm.
Is it also says be sure to listen to the person. Listen. Many times if you allow the person to talk, they'll tell you everything you need to know early on. If the person says, hey, I'm not really interested in having children, then listen and believe them. don't try to change the situation.
Yeah.
He will not change or the person will not change. And if he tells you something about themselves that would be a deal breaker in the relationship, why stick around?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that goes back to saying these are the things that I'm not willing to compromise. Make 2 lists, the things I am willing to compromise and the things I am not.
Mm-hmm.
And rule number 6 is see the big picture. Every relationship has its ups and downs, but decide on the direction that you want to go and do not get sidetracked from that.
Yeah.
There's no reset button. This is it. This is life. And no relationship is worth losing yourself over or hurting yourself over.
Yeah. But don't you think, especially
that's
for young
pretty
girls,
deep,
that that's
honey.
That's what?
I think especially for younger women, that's...
We just don't, as human beings, or maybe me as a woman, maybe it's me, but I'm like, we just don't go there. What you just said is a big deal.
What did I say?
To value myself enough at the very beginning of a relationship to say this is not working for me, that is a rarity. And
yeah.
but I think it's so important. I wish that all of us felt that way. And could be our truthful selves in all of our relationships. And what a different world it would be, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think especially the younger that you are, the harder it is to rely on that, listening to that inner voice and to have the confidence to say, okay, this guy's not going to work for me, and I move on to the next one.
Yeah.
Well, and I think people are also, I know for myself, I've been single for a really long time, and it definitely has its downside, but I really have decided it is better to be a single person living in the world and being authentic than losing myself in a relationship. A relationship should not ask you or demand that you lose yourself. A relationship should enhance who you already are and who you can become, and becoming a better person all around, not always accommodating to the other person. It should be a compliment to one another. And, being in a controlling or abusive relationship, your energy becomes so depleted in trying to survive and to navigate. Life is complicated enough to navigate without having that relationship that constantly demands you give of yourself continuously, because the other person is so empty and that all they have is to get, you know, fuel from you. You'll become a depleted person.
Mm-hmm.
And learn the lesson and move on. Yeah, it could hurt, but it's going to hurt longer in the end. And I think as a middle-aged woman, I had to learn that lesson twice with the same person. And the hope of that person changing and matching the behavior to the words was what I had what I lived for was just behave the way you're talking, what you're telling me.
Yeah.
You know, you love me, but yet you're saying you love me, but your behavior doesn't match the kind of love I expect or need. It may be the only kind of love that you have to show. That may be it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not, again, the kind of love or support or nurturing that I needed out of a relationship. And the hope of somebody changing is a false hope. It is absolutely a false hope. And it, even at some point, I think that we need to ask ourselves, wow, what am I getting out of this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's, to me, that almost sounds hurtful in a way to say that's victim blaming, but you really got to go, wow, so what am I getting out of this wanting so badly for this relationship to work when every behavior and day-to-day life indicates something very different than the words that are being spoken?
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to say, I love you. That's so easy. That's easy to say, I'm sorry. It's easy to say, I'll do better. But unless you actually practice in your behavior the words that you're speaking, and I think that that's really what this website is talking about, and the relationship, it's going to be much less painful, and you're not going to have so much of yourself invested if you pick up on those behaviors or words that aren't working for you.
That's easier to do from our perspective as mature women? And I'm just thinking back when I was a girl, and I don't think I could have done it as a young girl.
Well, I agree with that, Heather, but I would hope that, you know, one of my things is changing the social and cultural norms that put us in that kind of situation where we weren't maybe strong enough to go against the grain of our society and cultural expectations. But what I want for my granddaughters and my grandsons is that they have the ability to make that decision earlier in their life. I think it's a shame that you go through your younger, part of being in your teens and 20s, right, is pushing boundaries, and you think you know it all. So,
mm-hmm.
You are tending to to not want to listen to your intuition or the voice of wisdom or whatever it's called. But I would wish that my grandchildren could say, hey, this relationship is not working, and I know that there's a high value on being in a couple, but this is not a good relationship, so I have the ability and the right and the desire to end it. And I'm not going to be chastised or put down because I do that. Because that's kind of, I think, fear that I lived with, that, you know, my society and cultural did not like divorced people, did not have divorced families in it, and I didn't know what that would be like if I was divorced. So I had that, you know, internalized fear, which isn't valid, but...
Yeah.
So I want to go to her last point because we're just about towards the end of our show. Final rule 7, remember, love has nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you should stay or go is based on anything and everything discussed except love. We know you love him. He knows you love him. So what? The point being, if you find yourself in an unpleasant relationship and your only reason for staying is, quote unquote, because I love him, it's time to leave.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, that last statement really struck me too. I think sometimes, of course, you know, Hollywood and popular literature and everything makes it seem like as long as you have love, that's all you need. That's all you need. That's magic. So if you have that, you have everything. The other stuff is just trivial, and you can work past it. But I think her last point is really significant. You know, I love chocolate ice cream, but I can't have it every day, you know?
Yeah.
I can't live with it.
And they
that you can love people and that it might not be something that you have to live with every day. You know, you can love
right.
someone not need to be with them. You know,
yeah.
even in all the abusive marriage, there were still moments that were good and positive, and I got 4 beautiful kids out of it, but that's not enough reason to stay in that abusive relationship. You know, yeah,
well,
there
I
are moments that I remember, but...
Yeah, and I think your point about, you know, your religion and your beliefs, you know, not believing in divorce and all that, that's okay. You know what? You don't even have to get a divorce. You could get a legal separation, but you can get out of danger. You can get out of a relationship that's you know, really detrimental to you.
Yeah.
No matter what your beliefs.
Yes. Yes.
So,
and it's okay to make a mistake. I think we don't give ourselves enough credit or room for that to happen in our lives. That's how we learn, by making mistakes or getting more information and then changing our minds. But I thought, I made the decision to get married, so I can't take that back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but no, you can, especially when there are some things like, as this blog listed, some deal breakers going on.
Yes.
Hey, wait.
Fine.
So,
yeah.
Deb, do you have a quote for us today?
I do, and it's around decision making. I think it's a good one. People will never understand the decision you make unless they have experienced how hard it is to be in your place. And that's kind of where I wanted to end our show today.
Yeah, that's great.
Attributed to unknown, but that's all right, too.
Yeah. It's the whole, you know, walk in my shoes thing. And,
exactly.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's a hugely important for people when they hear about relationships or when they have a friend who's in a relationship that's not working or that person decides is not working for them any longer. I think one of the first inclinations that we have is to judge that. You know, well, you know, you should have tried it out this way. Did you try doing that? Did you try doing this? You know, it usually is that when a person makes a decision to actually leave the relationship, they have thought about it.
Yeah.
Or they have experienced something and that tells them that this is not the way to go. So I think that people looking into other people's relationships, one thing we have to always remember is you don't necessarily see what's going on there. You really don't see it. It's like, you know, that thing about the duck in the water. It seems all calm and sedate on top of the water, but underneath they're paddling like crazy. And
yeah.
I think it's important for us as friends and bystanders to recognize that whatever that decision is, that there's a reason for that decision. And
yep.
Support that.
All right.
So,
well,
all right.
I'm going to thank our listeners, and it was great talking with you ladies, as always, every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time. And we are three women.
Three ways.
Three divas.
All right.
Join us next week.